And it is 7:15, which means we have Max back in the studio to kind of wrap up the news from the week, some of the headlines, and let's not talk about cricket.
No, let's try not talk about cricket anyway. I'm sure there'll be an opportunity to segue into it at some point. But let's start off with Russia. That'll be a real jump to make, I suppose.
All right, let's do it.
Let's see how we go. So we'll start off with Russia. The Russia's just announced they're kicking out 60 American diplomats and closing down the consulate in St. Petersburg, and that's in pretty much direct retaliation to the US kicking out 60 Russian diplomats from Washington about a week ago. So this has been rolling on all week. It's in response to the poisoning of an ex-Russian spy in London at the start of the month. This story really feels like it's been going on forever.
I mean, the Cold War has been happening for a couple of decades now. It does feel like something that just never quite goes away and then just flares up every now and then with incidents like this attack.
Yeah, and like heating up a little bit, I suppose. What's interesting, I think, about this is it's maybe a little bit easy to forget as Russia and the US are going head to head. This whole thing started in the UK. You've got all these countries around the world, 25 countries now, who have joined together to expel more than 130 Russian diplomats. Russia don't really have too many people on their side here.
That is true. And I mean, international relations at the moment is in such a difficult place, not only between Russia and, I guess, the rest of the world, but between China, Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un, all these like things happening. It feels like everything's starting to come to a head.
It sort of does a little bit. Well, I mean, the Russian ambassador to Australia, we spoke about this, about an hour ago. He gave a pretty bizarre press conference in Canberra early this week. Not sure if you saw any of that, but went on for about an hour. He denied that Russia was responsible for the poisonings at all, as everyone is doing, everyone Russian is doing. He also said that Australian authorities had meddled with Russian diplomats in the past in Australia. I thought the funniest thing that he said was he again denied the poisonings. He said there are no poisonings in Russia, except maybe food poisonings. There you go. Good bit of diplomacy for the Russian ambassador.
That's
in
how
Canberra.
It works. Yep. So what else has been going on apart from the simmering global tensions?
Apart from those simmering global tensions, more Facebook news, or I suppose Facebook was pretty big this week. It came out, might have been late last week, that Facebook had been giving data to Cambridge Analytica, which is a political consultancy sort of connected to Donald Trump's campaign in 2016. They'd been handing over the data of over 50 million Facebook users to this political consultancy. And Facebook's been on a bit of a PR drive in the last couple of days trying to sort it all out. Have you left?
You know what? I actually left. I deactivated my account and then just logged back in the next day and forgot that I'd done all that in the first place. So I have not left Facebook. How about you?
I was prepared to leave, you know, to join the revolution, I suppose. I had my hand over the deactivate, you know, clicking over the deactivate button, but just couldn't bring myself to do it. I mean, how am I going to know, you know, who's going out on a Friday night, what's happening on a Saturday morning? Like, everything goes through Facebook.
How are you going to learn how to make a pizza or watch a kitten fall over? I mean, it's a really interesting example of the way our data is collected, though, because since this has happened, a lot of people have been downloading the data that Facebook has on them and being really surprised that there's like call logs, text messages, photos, things that don't necessarily have to do with Facebook, yet Facebook is collecting it anyway. But I feel like we already knew this. We just put it to the back of our mind so that we can still talk to people through social media.
I think so. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I go scrolling back through my Facebook feed, you know, a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, I'm seeing a lot of scary stuff that I'd totally forgotten about that Facebook is clearly still holding on to.
Yeah, it's something I think it almost feels inevitable, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out and if it will actually change the way people use social media or the way social media treats our privacy.
Well, Facebook rolled out a whole bunch of updates, or they announced a whole bunch of updates to the way that the privacy settings would be even just displayed for you to sort of go through and choose from. But you're right. I would imagine that Facebook will bounce back just fine.
Yeah, I suspect so as well. What else have we been looking at this week?
I suppose one social media network to another. Ecuador has cut off Julian Assange's internet access at their London embassy over a couple of tweets that he's been doing. He's been a naughty boy on Twitter, and now he's been grounded.
no internet.
Yeah, pretty much. So he's been challenging on Twitter Britain's accusation that Russia was responsible for this poisoning that we've just talked about. He's also been talking about the ex-Catalan president who's just been arrested in Germany. Part of the agreement that he could stay in the Ecuadorian embassy was that he didn't say anything on social media which could disrupt Ecuador's international relations with other countries. So one rule, I suppose there's a couple more rules, but... One big rule, and he's broken it, so...
And he has been in there for a while now.
He's been in there since 2012.
Oh, wow.
6 years.
That's such a long time to be in the building. Surely he must be going stir-crazy.
You'd think so, and now no internet. Like, internet goes out at my house for half an hour, and I lose it. I don't know how he's going to deal with it, especially because so much of what he does is online now. I mean, he can't leave that building. He feels like he's going to be arrested and sent to the United States.
Yeah. And so what else have we got? What else has been big this week?
Let's try and avoid going to the cricket.
Good. I am all for this. There's been nothing but cricket all week.
Well, look, I don't know how big this is, but I sort of thought it was interesting. Australia's opening up, well, in Sydney, they're opening up Australia's first brain bank to help scientists understand the impact of concussions on sports people. So there's a few conditions associated with playing contact sport, and one of those is a brain condition called CTE, which is caused by repeated concussions, can cause depression, memory loss, impulse control disorders. And what they've done is they've opened up this brain bank, and ex-Manly player Brian Taylor, his brain has been donated, and a whole bunch of other footballers have put their names forward to have their brains donated when they're ready. So ex-Wallaby,
not straight away.
No, Peter Fitzsimons, he's one of them. You need a pretty big room for his brain, you'd think. A bunch of other NRL players, former NFL player Colin Scott. All their brains will be donated to the Australian Sports Brain Bank in Sydney. And I brought that up because in other brain news this week, a bit of news from the UK, sorry, a startup has claimed in the UK that it will one day allow people to back up their brains. The price you'll pay for that, death.
Okay, so you can back your brain up into, I'm assuming, like the cloud, downloaded onto a USB.
That's correct.
But you're not going to be around to enjoy it, I guess. Is enjoy the right word for a downloaded brain?
Perhaps. They say they're capable of scanning the human brain and preserving it, perhaps one day running a deceased person's mind as a computer simulation. However, the whole process requires a fresh brain, so it's 100% fatal. That's a quote, 100% fatal. That's the future anyway.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'll sign a waiver for that.
I can't wait.
And what else, just before we go, is there anything else?
There is. So just lastly, and I suppose this is looking ahead a little bit to the Easter long weekend. We've been looking forward to this all week. There's a huge Chinese space station hurtling towards Earth. You've heard about this one?
Yes, I have. I'm very excited for it.
So I've printed out this article called What Should You Know About the Chinese Space Station Hurtling Towards Earth? And that sounds a little bit scary. What is it? It's called the Heavenly Palace. It was the first space station built and launched by China. It weighs 9.4 tons. It's been up there since 2013. It's meant to come down sometime over the Easter long weekend. They have no idea where it's going to fall.
I did see some maps that astrophysicists have been, I guess, charting possible places that it could land. And it's a pretty big swath of the Earth that it could fall in. But it does include a tiny bit of Australia.
Oh, does it? Okay. Did you see which part of Australia that was?
I believe that would be Melbourne.
Melbourne. Oh, lucky Melbourne, hey? Says here that the Northern Hemisphere prediction includes multiple states in the US, Northern California, Pennsylvania. Are you in danger of being hit? The odds of anything hitting anyone is very unlikely, considering in years of space exploration, only one person, Lottie Williams of Tulsa, has ever been struck by spacecraft debris. She wasn't seriously injured. She was hit on the shoulder by a piece of a rocket How unlucky.
How unlucky.
Well,
or lucky?
Unlucky and lucky at the same time, I suppose. So, yeah, I suppose over the weekend, look out for, keep an eye up in the sky.
Yeah, keep one eye to the sky for falling debris from space stations. I think we get so terrified of, you know, things falling from the sky, celestial events. Yeah, I think it speaks to us on a deep kind of level. But thank you, Max, for coming in.